I'm Ashley.
I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on Teachers Who Talk Crime
Podcast. So I will go first because I didn't get to talk about this last week. You guys have seen it in my story, but you probably don't have any background information on it. So my coworker and I, we found a PD, that professional development, if you're not a teacher, that we want to attend. It is this summer and it's in Orlando. Ooh. And so we sent a very well-written email with details, dates, prices, the breakdown, the breakout sessions, the speakers, the keynote speakers, the times, the place, everything, the whole shebang. And we were denied. So we have taken it upon ourselves to raise the money to go on this PD because it's something that we feel we need to do. We have had a very, very challenging year this year with just the many levels that our students come to us with. For example, you know, I'm doing systems of equations in my accelerated class where they're solving multi-step equations and then graphing them and then changing them back to slope-intercept form. And within that same day, I showed a kid the number 116 on a board. And he pronounced it 11-6.
Yeah, that's concerning.
So it's very tough this year. I'm doing my absolute best. She's doing her absolute best, my coworker. But we need more training. And we also don't believe that PD should be boring. So we are raising money. I know you've seen it in our story. It's a GoFundMe. We just raised enough to put the down payment, and the next payment, but the deadline is March 31st. So we are really hoping that we can raise all the money. We don't want to have to back out. We really want to do this opportunity. So if you are willing to donate, I will post it again on our story, and I will also put the link in our show notes, and it would be so much appreciated.
Yes, because we really need to help these kids pronounce their numbers correctly, because 11-6 ain't it.
Nope.
It ain't it. And
50-11 times.
Yeah. And just in case y'all didn't know, 50-11 is not a number either. So
it's not.
Yeah. So just.
But someone failed him because he rapped about it.
Yeah, but you know these rappers just be rapping about anything. So, you know, they don't count, but. That's the true. Children of America, we do need to help them out. So if you can help, you know, Brooke go on this fabulous experience so she can gain more knowledge to help teach the children of America, donate what you can.
Absolutely.
Any amount counts.
Well, how did your fundraiser go with the girls?
I only had one person from Teachers Talk Crime's listeners donate. Shout out to Michelle Benda. But last time I checked, hold on, I'll look. I haven't looked in a couple days. We currently have raised a total of, okay, you're going to make me sign back in again. That's perfect.
When's the deadline?
March.
Oh, okay. So it's like an ongoing fundraiser.
Yeah, it's ongoing. So we've right now we have raised $343.19.
That's awesome.
It's great. And we're currently the top fundraiser students in the building. So that's woo-hoo. Also, you know, we're just on top. We're trying to, you know, just come out on top and also help continue the fight against heart disease and strokes. So, yeah, I'm happy where we're at right now.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and Ashley did see each other. You'll see some new photos, some of the photogenics there.
Yeah.
So that was fun. We saw each other and I got to see the girls and yeah. We went live. Thank you if you joined our live. Yeah. That was so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Next time we'll give you like a time so you guys can like schedule because Brooke will, this time next week, Brooke should be down here. I think your plane should yes. be literally landing around uh-huh. this time. Yeah.
It will mm-hmm. be. And we could definitely do pretty much alive every day I'm there. Just to kind of build the followers. And like you said, you guys wanted to get to know us. So
yeah,
we can make it happen.
We definitely can. And then we will also be trying to gather some content for our possible YouTube that we'll be creating. So that'll be something that we do as well. Don't ask when the content's going to come out, because I have no idea. I'll figure it out, and then we'll get it out to you, and then you'll see it.
Yes. You have two episodes this week.
Yes. By the time you hear this, the full moon will have passed, but
It's still a full moon episode, baby.
Yeah, we're still going to deliver one. Just not on the actual full moon. So it's not, maybe going to be a toenail, but probably still a full moon. I'll look at the sky when we post it and we'll see what it can.
We'll determine what the clouds are doing.
Yeah, but regardless, you're going to get two episodes this week, definitely. So
fun stuff. Mm-hmm. But my case is pretty long this week, so we're going to keep going with everything that we normally do on this podcast, and you already know what's next.
Yep, it's time for our Estudiante Estrella.
Yeah, get really deep in that one.
Always. Our Estudiante Estrella this episode is Gamer 007722.
I feel like that's like user 1956705.
100%. I mean, this is the repetitive numbers, you know, just makes it really easy to say. But as per usual, it's a 5-star. So, and our review is titled "Wow, just wow." And Gamer 007722 said, "As a teacher and someone who loves true crime podcasts, this is one of the best out there. Brooke and Ashley keep it real when it comes to education, openly talk about how important therapy is, and share true crime stories that aren't as talked about. This is my favorite true crime podcast."
Aw, thanks, Gamer 007712.
22.
Yep.
So gamer. Wow. Gamer. What is going on, bro? Like, I can't. Gamer 007722. "I thank you so much for your review. This gold star's for you." Bing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to feed off of that review, I found this case on TikTok, but when I started researching this case, granted, there are some documentaries out there about it, obviously, like on the ID channel where they, you know, interview the inmates and things like that. There has been a book written about it, but there have not been a ton of podcasts cover this case. And so I dove right in, and it is a little lengthy because there's a ton of background on all of the people involved, and it's something that I think Ashley and I can really tear apart layer by layer because it's so deep. So I'm ready if you're ready.
I'm ready.
So sit down, shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora.
Okay, so the trigger warnings include death of a child, injury to an infant, robbery, kidnapping, self-harm, mentions of suicide, drug and alcohol use, and murder of adults. If this is not something that you are looking for on this Monday, we completely understand, and we will see you for the full moon episode.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I should mention satanic rituals and cult-like symbolism.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. We're just going to go right in there.
Way to throw it all in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, a combination of everything bad.
Yeah. It sounds like a cluster.
Like a little crock pot of bad.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Because you really do be throwing a lot of stuff in a crock pot. That was a really good analogy.
Out. Yeah. Yeah. So the overview of this case is, in April of 1997, a family of four was on their way home from a Jehovah's Witness conference in Johnson City, Tennessee, when they were kidnapped and led to their deaths. Their killers were six young adults ranging in ages from 14 to 20 years old.
Yoinks.
Mm-hmm. So on April 6, 1997, the Lily Lid family, who consisted of 2-year-old Peter, 6-year-old Tabitha, father Vidar, 34 years old, and mother Delphina, 28 years old, were on their way home to Knoxville, Tennessee. The family had been in Johnson City, Tennessee for a Jehovah's Witness conference. They were on their way back. And obviously a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old can be kind of taxing, as we all know, and traveling with children can be a lot and wear and tear. So the family decided to pull into a rest stop in Greene County for a quick stretch break, a picnic, and to use the bathroom.
Okay. I could definitely attest to that. I mean, I didn't go as far when we went to go see Brooke, but that hour and a half was a lot. I mean, the girls fell asleep rather quickly. But I know how car rides are with youngsters. So sometimes mm-hmm. you just got to take a break because they're a lot.
They are. Mm-hmm. And there's only so much entertaining you can do within a car.
Yes.
So this pit stop would not be the stop that they had expected. And it was obviously one that no one could even predict. The family unfortunately encountered a group of young adults with evil on their mind. But I do want to start with who the Lily Lid family was, and I will start with the father of the family, Vidar Lily Lid. He was originally...
Sorry, I was just trying to get the name. Lily Lid?
Lily Lid.
Lily Lid. Okay. I know you...
L-I-L-L-E-L-I-D.
That is the last name, I tell you. Lily Lid. Lily Lid.
Okay. It is a tongue twister.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, but go ahead. Sorry. I was just trying to get the pronunciation.
I saw you
down.
In the camera going like, her mouth was like moving, but no words were coming out. And it was like in the form of the last name. So I knew what she was trying to do.
Don't worry. Once we get our YouTube up, you'll be able to see all this stuff that we're talking about eventually.
Yes. So Vidar Lillelid was originally from Bergen, Norway, and he had migrated to the United States in 1985. He landed originally in Miami for some time period, and he ended up marrying and meeting Delphina Zellaway. And I'm probably mispronouncing her last name, but Delphina was a first-generation Honduran-American.
Okay.
Delphina was from New York City, but she had moved to Miami like Vidar, and they met through a mutual interest in the Jehovah's Witness denomination.
Okay.
The couple married in 1989 and began a family in 1997 by welcoming a baby girl named Tabitha.
Okay.
They then welcomed their second child, a boy named Peter. The family was looking for a way to escape this whole like Miami lifestyle, this Miami scene. And some sources mentioned that they felt like Miami had too much of a crime rate at the time.
I mean, it still does.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And so they decided to settle into a community in Powell, Tennessee, a more quiet country life, simple.
Yeah, I don't want to say more like a better place to raise your kids, but if you ever look, like, because kids could be raised anywhere, but something more their speed as far as raising a family.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. They remained active in their church. And also in their community, and you'll see later that the community really rallied behind this family and took this tragedy as their own personal tragedy. And so they really found that lifestyle they were looking for and that community that they were looking for in Powell, Tennessee. They were all, by all accounts, a wonderful, wholesome family. They were someone who would talk to anyone on the street. They were always talking about their religion and their walk with God, and they were always wanting to share their faith. And this is something that we all know Jehovah's Witness denomination is known for. I mean, you know, they knock on your doors and they yep. want to tell you about their faith.
Mm-hmm.
But these are really good people. They were great parents. It was reported in one source that Delphina was, you know, always prepping the kids with their homework and helping them with schoolwork and working around the house and just a loving, doting wife. So now we're going to talk about the group that the Lily Lids encountered, as this is the focus of this crime. And because we are the podcast that we are, we like to examine the youth defenders from a teacher perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 6 members of this group slash cult, depending on what you listen to or how you want to interpret this situation. I'm going to call them a group, and I will let you decide if you feel that the word group should really be the word cult.
Okay.
They ranged from 14 to 20 years old, and they were all from or around Pikeville, Kentucky.
Mm.
Kentucky being a part of the Bible Belt, and this was the 90s, this group stood out immensely.
What's a Bible Belt?
So I live in the Bible Belt. So the whole southern region is known as like the Bible Belt because, you know, church is such a huge thing in this way of life.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
So
these states are called the Bible Belt.
Oh, wow. The more you know.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, depends on who you ask. But yes. Yeah. So this group of kids were not dressed like the mainstream, and they didn't act like it either. This group was all drawn together by a common interest, the gothic world.
Okay. I mean, we've done a couple cases.
We have.
Yeah.
They all had troubled backgrounds, and they all struggled academically in school. Some even struggled with substance abuse and even grew up in abusive homes.
Oh.
5 out of the 6 members attended Betsy Lane High School, where the youngest member, the 14-year-old, did not attend because he never made it to high school.
Oh.
This is where the group became aware of one another, with the exception of the youngest one, obviously, and we'll get to how his connection kind of intertwined. And I will list them starting with the presumed leader of the group, and then I will work my way down by age, starting with the oldest to the youngest.
Okay.
So Natasha Cornett was known as their ringleader, according to court documents. Natasha was 18 years old at the time of the incident, and I'm going to refer to it as an incident because we haven't actually talked about what happened yet.
Okay.
She was born in Betsy Lane, Kentucky. This is in Pike County. Does this sound familiar, Ashley? Pike County?
Like the Piketon Creek Massacre?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
damn.
Yeah. Look like that y'all breeding some type of people down here.
I really, you know, that really stood out to me there.
You know, like, because did they find who did that?
Yeah.
They did find
that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The 3rd season talks about how they're in trial right now currently.
Oh, yeah. Because I think I stopped. Because I know the last thing I heard is they didn't have anyone. Right?
Oh, yeah. You need to jump back on that bandwagon.
Yeah, definitely do. But that's like, y'all from the same area? What y'all doing over there?
So, she and Natasha and her mother were living below the poverty line in a rundown trailer. Natasha, however, displayed a lot of potential in elementary school and kind of throughout middle school. But she started being shunned out by her peers around the middle school age group. She started feeling like she didn't fit in and was being left out. And this is kind of when her behavior became very odd.
Mm-hmm.
She had developed an eating disorder and suffered from a bipolar disorder. This was untreated due to the family's lack of money and insurance coverage.
Ugh.
Yeah. It was around 6th grade when she began to take a turn for the worse. Reports say she did try to seek help from school authorities, but they went unnoticed, and eventually she dropped out of school before completing the 9th grade.
Wow.
And it doesn't ever say why or did they, if they investigated the school, like what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But what I could assume is this is the 90s and she's acting and looking different than the mainstream. She's gothic. She's has an eating disorder. She doesn't come from a well-to-do family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making assumptions, but what I could imagine happened hypothetically is that she was different and they strayed away from different, even teachers in that day and age.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I would say that's a good, not assumption, but a good thought process.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So Natasha began self-harming and even attempted to take her own life at the age of 13 years old.
Dang.
She did not have a job or a stable home life after she dropped out of school, and she was now drinking heavily and using various drugs. These included heroin, ecstasy, and cocaine.
Damn.
Her criminal record started at the age of 14 years old when she was arrested for forgery of checks and was sentenced to 1 year of probation.
Damn.
I know. It was not long after that that she threatened her mother's life by holding a knife to her mother. Her mother did end up dropping the charges, but by then Natasha had left the home briefly to get married to a longtime friend at the age of 17 years old.
What the hell?
She's going through it.
She is the definition of going through it, okay?
Yeah.
Wow.
This obviously fizzled out because she's 17 years old.
Yeah.
And it fizzled out within about a 10-month period. And it was reported that when her husband returned her to her mother's home, he kicked her out of the car and drove off without saying a word.
Damn. Mm-hmm. Not returned her to her mother.
Return to sender.
Like, and not just literally kicking her out the door and be like, sayonara, sucker. Like, that's wild.
Yeah.
That's really wild.
It was rough.
Yeah.
Natasha, in an interview, said that this is when she, quote unquote, caved in, and her mental health problems significantly increased. This is also when Natasha fully embraced the goth culture by wearing all black, listening to dark music, and dabbling in witchcraft.
All right, Harry yeah. Potter.
Yeah, I know, right?
All right, come on now.
This lifestyle became something her friends and group members were drawn to, and she informally became their leader.
Okay.
The next up that we're going to talk about now starts with their actual ages from oldest to youngest. Okay. So, like I just said, Natasha was 18, so she is legally an adult at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Risner is the next person we're going to discuss. Joseph was the oldest in the group at 20 years old.
Okay.
He was born October 13th, 1976 in Kentucky. His mom was married to a man who was not Risner's biological father, but he took his last name. Risner lived in both Kentucky and Georgia growing up, and by all accounts, he was a good student with a good work ethic. This was until his father and his stepfather, but really the only father he had ever known, separated. This trauma changed the course of his life. He and his mother moved back to Kentucky, where he admits to having a drug and alcohol problem. He was smoking weed, drinking heavily, and used LSD.
Oy.
He even said that by the age of 12, he had had 2 sexual relationships with females who were supposed to be his babysitters.
Oh, gosh. Not taking advantage of the little boy. Come on now. What is wrong with you?
His grades and work ethic obviously took a dramatic turn, and mm-hmm. he ended up failing both the 7th grade and the 8th grade.
Wow. And that was no child left behind there, so they just were like, okay.
Yeah.
So there was like, so he failed the 7th grade, he failed the 8th grade, so there's no like, I'm gonna hold you back, like, you failed, but keep going, like, what?
So I don't know if I think he did repeat those grades, which would put him, because you got to think, he went to school with
the
Natasha,
rest of them,
who's
and he
18,
was,
yep. That's 2 years difference, and he failed 2 years. So that would put him with them.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I'm thinking he did actually repeat those grades, but he did have more luck once he got into high school, and in the 10th grade, his reports from the school show his grades started to improve.
Okay.
It is unclear why there was a sudden change in his academic levels, but Risner did end up graduating from Betsy Lane High School and meeting his girlfriend, Karen Howell. Risner attempted to stay on the straight and narrow by enlisting in the U.S. Army after graduation in 1995, but was discharged when he tested positive for marijuana.
Damn.
This did not, however, dull his shine. He earned his GED and was even accepted into the Mayo Regional Technology Center.
Okay.
But then comes his connection to the group.
Mm-hmm.
It began at Betsy Lane High School when he knew who Natasha was, and he met Karen Howell, his girlfriend. And when he began dating Karen, he found himself intertwined with Natasha. Risner did not have a criminal record at the time of the incident. Next up is Dean Mullins. And I don't know why, but that gives me very, like, I feel like the name Dean Mullins should be, like, an artist or something.
I was thinking more of, like, a Twilight.
Yeah. Because his name was Cullen.
Yeah.
That's Mullins, Cullen.
That's immediately what I thought of. And I feel like Dean would be, like, a very, like, on the same, like, caliber as, like, Edward, you know?
I feel that. I can actually see that.
Yeah.
So Dean Mullins was 19 years old and was born in 1978 in Kentucky, just like the others. Dean made it to his senior year at Betsy Lane High School, but unfortunately did not complete his degree. And you know what? There was a guy that I went to high school with, and he made it all the way to spring semester of his senior year and then walked in and was like, I'm kind of done.
I remember you told us about this on one of the other episodes.
Like, what the hell? You're so close.
Like, just finish and then do what you want, you know?
Like, it's only a few months away.
Yeah, like, the end
is near.
You
could probably stop coming and still be able to walk. But no, you, like, signed the paper and were like, adios.
That's wild. I wonder what he's up to now.
I don't know. I need to look that up.
Facebook stalk him.
So Dean Mullins wasn't a freeloader, and he was working on his GED. So Mullins had no criminal record, unlike Natasha, the ringleader, and he even had a job at the local grocery store in Pikeville. He was, by all accounts, doing great. He had had some low-down moments, but he was overcoming them. But that all changed when he began dating Natasha.
Damn.
His friends and families immediately noticed a huge switch in Dean Mullinson's behavior, and it progressively got worse as the couple continued to date.
Like, what did he even see in her? Because I feel like they're, like, not even similar, you know?
Yeah. Well, when he was asked what his intentions were with Natasha, he stated he had planned to marry her one day. He was that in love.
Why?
She just isn't holding very many traits that would appeal to me.
Yeah, she must have had a good, that, what do you call that?
Poo nanny.
She must have.
She got the good poo nanny.
She must have.
Because I don't know what else it would be.
Because, child, you was bad news bears.
All around bad news bears.
Bad news bears with a good poo nanny? Child. Yep.
I'm telling you, the poo nanny does something. It does. It does.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So next we have Crystal Sturgill. And it could be Sturgill. I'm not sure. But either way, it's Crystal.
Yeah. There's a decent amount of girls in this little gang here.
Three girls, three boys.
Yeah. Okay.
So Crystal was 18 years old and, by all accounts, was a legal adult, according to the system.
Yep.
She was born on March 13th, 1979 in, you guessed it, Kentucky. Her mother was Teen, her mom's literal name was Teen Blackburn, but her father's name has never been disclosed. Crystal was slightly above her counterparts academically, and she, too, attended Betsy Lane High School. Her school records show her intelligence was above those among this group, but her grades, however, reflected differently and began to decline around her high school years. When asked what she thought attributed to her grades slipping, she blamed alcohol and drugs. However, she still performed well on tests like the ACT, which she scored a 28 on.
I don't think I took that. So I don't really know what the correlation to, like, grades. I only took the essay. Was it the SAT?
Oh, so we took both.
Yeah, I don't think I took that other one. I don't remember taking that one.
How did you get into, like, I mean, I know you're an athlete, but, like, what score did you need for college?
I don't remember, but I was good. I did well on the test, but I don't think I took the ACT. I don't think I took that.
Well, it is. I hate that test. It was stupid.
I mean, I hate all the tests. I think they're all pretty dumb. I mean, some people have test anxiety. So, like, even if you're the smartest person in the world, you just get anxious with a test. It's not really going to show your true potential on there. So.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
So she did perform well on these tests. And again, though, then you have those people, Ashley, in a counter defense to what you just said. Then you have some of those people who classroom and academically inside the school aren't very smart, but then are good test takers because mm-hmm. they know test taking skills.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, take it for what you want.
Yeah.
She even applied to a few colleges with this score, and she worked at Betsy Lane Elementary School as a co-op program. She worked in the daycare department, and her supervisors really believed in Crystal, and they thought that she displayed a lot of caregiver potential who could possibly go on to work with kids.
Wow.
She, her supervisor, was blown away at the path that Crystal ended up taking and still kind of believes that justice was wrongly served, and you will see what I mean.
Huh. So, like, she didn't do it, or...
Well, that's going to be called into question.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Crystal did not have a criminal history and only had minor offenses in school, such as like things, just little petty things that any kid's going to get in trouble for. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. she didn't bring drugs to school. She didn't call in bomb threats. She didn't lash out at teachers. It was just like minor things. I'm sure she got caught talking or having, I mean, I don't even know if they had phones in, but it would be stuff in that could equate to like having your phone mm-hmm. or being late to class
yeah.
or excessive tardies. So very minor things.
Okay.
She did have a rough home life though, and she was very neglected at home, and she even brought forward some allegations of her stepfather saying that he had sexually assaulted her. Her mother did not take her side and ended up staying with her stepfather even after her stepfather openly admitted to sexually abusing Crystal.
Damn, were you that lonely?
I could never imagine.
Like, did you really need him that bad?
Over your daughter.
Right? Like, people.
Yeah. Yikes. So this meant that Crystal had to move from her home with her mother, and she moved in with her aunt. But see, Crystal began hopping around from place to place because her aunt was like, okay, you can stay here a few weeks, but then you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so because she moved in with her aunt, she also had to move schools. So she enrolled in Preston Burke High School. She bounced around from place to place, which weighed heavily on her. She made the decision to come forward about her stepdad in December, and by April of that same year, she had already lived in 13 homes.
13?
Yes.
Whew. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of jumping around. Especially
that's very unstable.
Yeah, and especially dealing with, you know, the trauma that, you know, happened to you and having...
Basically, your mom calling you a liar.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot to deal with for mm-hmm. a kid, quote unquote. Yeah.
Absolutely. So this is kind of where Natasha steps in, because Crystal was actually good friends. Keep in mind, Crystal did not have a criminal record. She was actually smart in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, she couldn't help what was going on in her home life, so that did affect her grades. But overall, she was a good kid.
Mm-hmm.
And she was friends with Natasha's boyfriend, Mullins, Dean Mullins.
Mm.
And this is how she found herself involved with Natasha. Crystal began living with Natasha when Natasha opened up her home to Crystal to a troubled girl that needed a place to stay. She gave Crystal a sense of comfort and stability.
Oh, that seems like how she's like really luring him in here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like she's got a web or something. Her punani is like the web, and they just all like sticking to it.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, because Natasha maybe had not necessarily a similar experience, but like can feel for her, maybe that's why she opened her home as well, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like Natasha was like, I know what you're going through.
Yeah.
Like, I have a rough home life as well, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. But at least I have a roof, and you're more than welcome to it.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So then we have Karen Howell. And here's where we get to the two people that are underage.
Okay.
By the way the justice system works. So Karen Howell, as I briefly mentioned earlier, was 17 years old. She was actually not from Kentucky originally. She was born in Delaware, Ohio.
I was like, Delaware? Uh-uh. But Delaware, oh, we passed that when we were visiting Ari, remember? There was a sign for Delaware.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Shout out to Ari. Be.
Yeah. She on her cruise. She just cruising. She's cruising just through life.
Living her best life.
I know. So her family did end up moving to Kentucky when she was around 3 years old. So she did actually grow up in Kentucky. She just, that was not her original hometown.
Okay.
And she also grew up watching her parents fight, and I mean fight. And by the time she was 9 years old, they had gotten a divorce. Mm. Karen was what we would classify today as a special needs child.
Mm.
We would probably, if Karen was a student in today's age, if we based it off of IQ levels, Karen, they, in all of my resources, and I understand this was politically correct at the time, but I don't use this word, but Karen, they use the R word.
Yeah.
Okay, so to describe Karen. And she had an IQ below a 78.
Mm.
So she was very unintelligent, wow. Which does make for, unfortunately, someone who can be easily manipulated 100%. And guided.
And this is the girl. She was girlfriends
dating
with
Risner.
Okay. All right.
Yes. Okay, so Natasha is dating Dean Mullins with no criminal record. And Karen Howell is dating Risner, who is 20 years old and Karen is 17 years old.
And that just makes me question him because so clearly she's intellectually disabled.
Yes.
She's 17. He's 20.
Yeah. And I mean, unfortunately, Karen, by definition, is the perfect target for mm-hmm. someone who can be manipulated and gaslighted and kind of guided in a way that she shouldn't have been.
100%.
Karen went on to state that she had been sexually abused by her uncle and cousins from 5 years old to 10 years old.
Oy.
During Karen's teen years, she began self-harming. She lived with her mother until she was 14 years old, but she had an issue with the rules that her mother would set into place. She fought a lot with her mother, and she began to dabble in drugs and alcohol. According to one source, on a bad trip with LSD, she even tried to pull an Austie Frosty and chew her friend's arm off.
Wow.
Yeah. She would run away from home often and even found interest in witchcraft.
Oh, gosh.
She would use Ouija boards, and this act was found out by her mother, who then called a priest to quote-unquote cast out her demons in an exorcism.
Ooh.
Karen said she also enjoyed casting love spells on boys to make her fall in love with them.
To make her fall in love with them?
No, to make them fall in love with her. Sorry.
Oh, I was about to say, girl,
I don't think it works like that.
No, girl.
Mm-mm. So eventually Karen did move in with her dad, who didn't really talk to Karen very much. But I guess when she got tired of her mom, she just was like, I don't really care that dad's never spoken to me. I'm going to go live with him.
Mm-hmm.
So she moved in with her dad after the exorcism and ultimately dropped out of high school. She did, however, pursue her GED, and she also had no official criminal record before this incident. But she definitely wasn't in her right mind from the get-go.
Yeah.
She did try to take her own life 4 times before the incident happened, and she found herself entangled with Natasha through her high school, the Betsy Lane High School, and their similar interest in goth culture, witchcraft, and vampires.
Oh, I thought she was going to say wizardry.
yeah.
Wow. This Natasha girl is just... Really?
I think Natasha's the one that cast the spell because they're just like flocking.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. In some way, which way or when, like they are just like, ooh, Natasha, she's the bee's knees. And it's just like, no, she's not. Yeah. But okay.
Hmm. And so lastly, we have our 14-year-old Jason Bryant.
Okay.
Okay, so before we go into Jason, I just wanted to go over it again. Natasha, 18 years old, the ringleader. Risner, 20 years old, the oldest male, who was dating Kieran Howell, a 17-year-old female.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal, 18 years old, and Mullins, 18 years old.
Okay.
Okay. Mullins was dating Natasha. Crystal was dating no one.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have Jason Bryant, and he is the 14-year-old, and he was born in Kentucky. But he didn't know the others through high school because he was a lot younger than them.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, like Karen, was below the average on the intelligence scale, and he had an IQ below 85. He lacked many emotional and social skills, and some equated his intelligence to that of a 10-year-old, even though he was 14 years old.
Wow.
Jason struggled from substance abuse and had begun drinking at the age of 3 years old.
How do you start drinking at three? How?
I don't even know.
Like, I'm
just putting in your bottle.
Like, I'm just imagining the twins at three, and there was no way they can even access things like that. So how do you even do that?
Yep. He said in his interview he had begun drinking at 3 years old.
I would like him to elaborate, because that doesn't make any sense.
How do you even know what you're touching is alcohol? Like, how do you understand what alcohol is?
And also, where are your parents while you're supposedly drinking at 3 years old?
Just
throwing them back.
Ooh. So Jason didn't start off life with a lot of high hopes, you know, drinking at three.
Yeah.
Jason was only in the eighth grade when the incident took place and had only been associated with the group for 1 month before his whole life would change.
Wow.
This also meant that according to the court of law, he was the only legal minor amongst the group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kieran Howell was 17, yes, but a legal minor that could have his record sealed was Jason Bryant.
Okay.
So Jason found himself meeting Natasha on the streets, and Natasha being, you know, the caregiver that she is.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, oh, sweet baby, come in here. Let me give you a home and great friends and this family. I don't know how she actually pitched it. I'm just imagining that.
Yeah.
But Jason, you know, being a 3-year-old that was drunk, I mean, he's 14, but like, he's been drinking since he's three. There's no telling what else he did.
Yeah.
He saw this, like the others, as stability and someone who accepts him. So that's how he became involved in the group.
Okay.
Now, the group would often stay and party at Natasha's home. Her mom said that she didn't know what the kids were up to, and she showed very little care in the manner.
The mom?
Yeah.
You don't care what these kids are doing in your house? Okay.
Mm-mm.
Awesome.
So there was some debate that, like, oh, well, she just wanted to make sure Natasha was there. Like, so you know how some parents are like, well, as long as they're drinking under my roof, I don't care.
Mm-hmm,
it's kind of, I think, that kind of mindset. But, like, your kids weren't just drinking.
Yeah, some were doing LSD, cocaine, heroin, like.
Witchcraft.
Yeah.
Ouija boards.
Mm-hmm. It was just a lot of clustering things happening in your home, ma'am. So I think you need to give a little bit more care.
Mm-hmm.
What's
absolutely
down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. So the group would perform rituals, they would self-harm together, and then they would lick/drink each other's blood.
You know, I was waiting for that. They seem like a group that would do things like that. I'm not really surprised.
Yep.
Yeah,
it was only a matter of time when I was gonna say it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So this does go into the fact that they were obsessed with vampire culture, and they were obsessed with vampire role playing.
How do you role play?
Might have been like cosplay, but then I don't really know what vampire role playing is.
Like, you really got fangs and you pretend like you a vampire, and
like, do they have the little white ones you get at Halloween? You stick in your mouth and I'm going to drink your blood.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Or are you, like, trying to be, like, a Twilight vampire, you know?
Mm.
I don't know. But regardless, I've never heard of vampire. What was the word you said?
Role playing.
Yeah, I've never heard of role playing as a vampire. That's just.
So some said in the community that they believed this group was a satanic cult, although the group to this day denies any relation to being a satanic cult. The group had been at a pay-by-the-hour type of motel the night before they encountered the Lily Lid family, and they had planned to travel to New Orleans. They hit the road in Risner's mom's car, a car made for four people, and there were six in the group.
Oh, no.
The group knew that this car would not make the journey all the way from Kentucky to New Orleans, so they began discussing about stealing another car. They had an idea about stealing from a dealership, stealing from just a random person. But nonetheless, before they left on this said road trip, they went and robbed their own family members for cash and guns. So they were now armed with cash and a 9 milliliter, not milliliter.
We in science class. Filling up beakers.
Yep. They were now armed with a 9 millimeter and another 25 caliber pistol.
Now, when you say the car wasn't going to make it, was it like a clunker or like did they not have money for gas? I know you said they stole money, but like. Okay.
No. It was a clunker, and they were also six deep in a four deep car.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So witnesses and even a friend of the Lily Lids saw the group at the rest stop on Interstate 81. So a friend that had also been at the convention with the Lily Lids stopped at this same rest stop, had a conversation with Delphina, went to the restroom with Tabitha and Delphina, and when she walked out of the restroom, she kind of passed by Natasha.
Mm-hmm.
She went to her car, they continued talking, and when she left the rest stop, she waved goodbye, looked over, and saw Vidar and Peter at the picnic tables talking to the group of teens.
Mm.
She said this was not uncommon. Vidar kept a pamphlet about Jehovah's Witness in his pocket. He was always eager to talk about God and religion and spirituality. And who better to talk to about this than a bunch of kids wearing all black?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they were spotted, like I said, having a conversation with the Lily Lids. This wasn't uncommon, and no one thought anything of it, even other strangers that came forward as witnesses at this rest stop.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the picnic table, Vidar was holding Peter, and he was actually talking to Natasha and Karen, when Risner and Bryant walked up and joined the conversation. The other two, Mullins and Crystal, were still in the car, and this is when Risner approached the car saying something along the lines of, quote, "We're about to do something serious. Be ready."
Oh, wow.
He then grabbed the gun and went back to the picnic table where he pulled the gun out and said, quote, "I hate to do it to you this way, but we're going to have to take you with us for your van." They forced the Lily Lids into the van and drove 5 miles down a rural road. Vidar offered his keys, his wallet, anything he could to the group. He was basically begging for them to spare their lives. Mm-hmm. "Leave us here on this abandoned road. We will walk. We will figure it out. Take our van. Take everything we have. Just don't hurt us."
Yeah.
He wanted the group to know that they had a choice in the matter, but according to the group, Risner refused. Risner, Bryant, Karen, and Natasha were in the van with the Lily Lid family while Mullins and Crystal were in the car. What breaks my heart about this whole situation is that Delphina began singing hymns to her children while they were hysterical in hopes that it would calm them. Bryant told Delphina to stop singing or he would hurt them. The group lined the family up along a ditch and shot all of them.
Oh my gosh, that wasn't even necessary.
Yeah.
You could have just left them there.
When Bryant checked the bodies, he said, quote, "They're still fucking alive." And the family was shot again.
Oh. So each of them got two.
Oh, no.
Oh no, there's more. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, the group to this day still differs on who actually pulled the trigger, and no one wants to come forward with that information, and no one wants to admit to being the mastermind behind wanting to actually kill the family.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, they were all there, and all parties took place in this horrible tragedy.
100%.
Surrounding houses in the area of the rural road, people heard gunshots and even reported that it sounded like kids were partying. They could hear laughing and screaming, and they reported these gunshots, and they called 911.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors said that Delfina's gunshot wounds were not what killed her, but the killers after... Now, this is total speculation. None of the members have admitted to this, and there are two people within the court system that have differing opinions.
Mm-hmm.
One says that the bodies coincidentally fell like this, and the prosecutor says that no, the bodies were arranged like this. So take it for how you would like. I think personally, if you asked my opinion, I think they were arranged like this because of just other various signs at the crime scene. And I'll tell you what I mean.
Okay.
So Delfina was shot, but that is not what killed her. And when the killers went to leave, they arranged the victims' bodies in the shape of an upside down cross.
Yeah, there's no way you can fall like that. They were definitely arranged.
See, that's what I thought too. I was like, how do you fall like an upside down cross, like a perfect upside down cross?
Especially if you line them up and we're just like pew pew pew, like in a row. They're not just gonna no.
Yeah. And then there's one other thing that makes me think they were arranged, and I'll tell you in just a second. But they did this when they believed that all of the family members were dead.
Mm-hmm.
This is when they took the van and they had left their own vehicle on the side of the road. But they did not leave before running over both Vidar and Delfina. And this is what ultimately killed Delfina.
Oh my gosh. What is the purpose of running her over? You already shot them.
Yeah.
Multiple times. They're clearly like, you know, on their... Sounds horrible to say. Like on their way, you know.
To dying.
Yeah. And you run them over?
Yeah.
And then you leave your car, like your registration can't be checked or something, like.
So, yeah, interesting you say that, because that is what happened. Like they did, they obviously do not have the intelligence in this group. The intelligence in this group is very much lacking.
Yeah.
And they did end up leaving Risner's mother's car behind. But let me tell you, Ashley, they thought they were brilliant. They took the license plates off.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. There's VIN numbers inside all the cards, you dipsy doodles.
Exactly. Which is what they did. They ran the VIN number. They found Risner's mother, who said, oh yeah, my son took that car. Oh, and here are the people he's with. Oh, she conveniently, luckily, remembered every single person's name that her son had left with.
Good.
I know.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So the group headed towards their destination of New Orleans. They went through Georgia. They did stop at a Waffle House, but then they panicked and they freaked out and they left because they saw police officers walk in to get something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So this is at the point when they abandoned their idea of going to New Orleans and they decided to head to Mexico.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So when police arrived on the scene where the bodies were arranged as an upside down cross, Vidar and Delfina had three shots in their chest that resembled a perfect equilateral triangle.
Huh.
Both of them. So that piece right there, that makes me think that this cross, this upside down cross, wasn't by accident.
Yeah, it was intentional.
Right. Because also, how did you shoot a perfect equilateral triangle?
Yeah, unless, yeah, you can't just do that by chance, especially on two people. There's no way you're that lucky. Yeah.
On two people.
Mm-hmm.
It was determined that Vidar had six gunshot wounds, and it was said that he died within a few minutes of being shot. Delfina, however, was shot 8 times and lived roughly 30 minutes after she was shot.
Oh.
This means she watched her husband die and her children being shot in the head.
Oh.
What ultimately killed Delfina was when she was run over by their own van. Tabitha, 6 years old, was shot once in the head. This shot did not kill Tabitha immediately, but it did cause her to go into immediate brain dead. Like, it caused her to be immediately brain dead.
Oh, man.
They rushed Tabitha to the hospital, but she was pronounced dead the next day. But Tabitha's name lives on as her organs were recovered and donated.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Peter Lillilid, the 2-year-old, was shot twice. One shot entered behind his right ear and exited his right eye.
Oh.
The second shot went through his back and out his chest.
Mm.
He was lying face down in the mud when officers arrived.
Oh.
When they turned little Peter over, he caught his breath and had began to cry.
Oh.
He was minutes away from suffocating in the mud. He was rushed to an intensive care unit at the University of Tennessee, and he remained in critical condition, but by nothing less than a miracle, 11 days after the shooting, doctors removed his dead eye, and then 7 days after that, he was transferred to a rehab center. Peter did survive the family attack.
Oh, he's the only one.
Yes.
Oh, that poor baby. That poor baby.
That, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Man.
The group had ditched their idea, as I mentioned earlier, by heading to New Orleans, and they decided to go to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They somehow did find their way into Mexico, and this is where, like, literally I found no details of this story. I can't even remotely make something up, but it said, this is what it said. They found their way into Mexico, and this is where Bryant ended up getting shot or shot himself. None of this was fatal. He, like, shot himself in the hand or something. It was really superficial.
Okay, idiot.
And this sparked interest from the Mexican cops, and when they searched the group, they found items that belonged to the Lillilid family, such mm-hmm. as a notebook and a unicorn and a hair clip and a journal and even a picture.
Yeah.
And so they knew something was up, and they also found the guns and the knives. I don't know specifically about the guns, but I do know they found a knife.
Okay.
And when they checked the registration wasn't to anyone in the group. They did not have proper identification to be in Mexico. So this just sent up a bunch of, like, red flags.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And all of this happened within 2 days of the murders. So they returned the group to the United States in the Arizona area, and they were held in an Arizona facility. The group was then extradited back to Greenville, where they faced hell on earth.
I can imagine.
So this is where I said that the community, like, rallied around the Lillilid family. And the community wanted to make their point so known that they decided to hang 6 nooses as a symbolic representation of what the city felt should happen to the 6 killers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. They were dedicated. They were like, you know, we got to let them know, like, y'all did some crazy stuff, and this is what needs to happen to y'all.
And y'all are not welcome here. Go back
yep.
to where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some of the group members swore that Bryant was the only one who was the shooter. And a lot of people analyze this as to why the 5 group members attacked Bryant. And they said that this was more or less a plan all along. And even Bryant said this. He said, it's a plan to blame me because I'm the youngest and I can't get the death penalty.
Mm.
Which makes sense. Let's put it on the kid. And that way we only get life and he would ultimately take the, you know, the higher charge.
Yeah.
So authorities believe there was more than one shooter, and this is because there was a total of 14 shots fired, and there were shells from both guns found at the scene.
Mm-hmm.
So in my imagination, I'm picturing 2 people standing there shooting, one with the 25 caliber and mm-hmm. one with the 9 millimeter.
Uh-huh. Damn it. Yep.
Yeah, the 9 milliliter.
Millimeter. Meter.
Millimeter. Mm-hmm. So is it possible that one person held both guns? Yeah, it's possible. I mean, does it make the most sense? No, mm-hmm. but it could be possible. Nonetheless, all 6 members were there. All 6 members were an active participant yep. in what happened.
Yep.
No one stepped forward and tried to stop it. No one went and got help. No one called 911. No one left the scene and, you know, went back to their normal life. You know, they all went along with this. So at the end of the day, does it really matter who actually pulled the trigger? Well, that's a matter of opinion, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So All six group members agreed to plead guilty to the first degree murder, and this is because they were seeking the death penalty on the legal adults.
Okay.
So the four members that were above the age of 18. Now, Karen Howell was 17, and they were not seeking the death penalty for her because of her age. And okay. Obviously, they did not seek the death penalty for Jason Bryant because of his age.
Okay.
However, the stipulation was, in order to take the death penalty off the table, all members had to agree to this. So if just one member wanted to take their chance in court, the whole deal for everyone was off the table.
Ooh.
And here's where my selfish brain comes in, because I don't know about you, but if I knew that I was in the other car and I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time and I did not participate and I never held that gun and I never shot a shot, I would be taking my chances in court.
Yeah.
Screw y'all. I'm sorry about it.
Because at the end of the day, someone's negative, you know, manipulative self, you know, got me into this situation. Granted, everybody has a choice. You didn't have to join this little, you know, cult, whatever you want to call it. But here you are. But I agree. If I really know in my heart of hearts that I did not pull the trigger, I was just there. Child, screw the rest of y'all. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all gonna I'm gonna get
a second degree murder charge or a manslaughter charge. I'm not gonna take first degree.
Because I ain't doing nothing.
Mm-mm. Karen stated about this whole ordeal, saying, quote, "I wanted to fight it in court, even though I was not subject to the death penalty, but they were threatening to kill everyone if I didn't sign it, so I caved in the pressure."
Wow.
Yeah. Each group member was ultimately sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole.
Good.
Natasha's attorney tried a very unique attempt right when sentencing and all of this kind of started, and he encouraged Natasha to state to the media and in interviews that she was Satan's daughter and she spoke to Satan and Satan got her through rough times and Satan led her down this path and blah, 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 blah. And this was obviously to make her seem like she wasn't in her right mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work. It was a very unsuccessful idea, and it was even unsuccessful again in 2002 when she tried to appeal her sentencing. So now you just look like an idiot.
Yeah, a complete fool.
Mm-hmm. The DA also said that they knew Bryant was, in fact, one of the shooters, but they just didn't feel confident that they could prove that without a shadow of a doubt to a jury.
Yeah.
And they felt that it just wasn't just, you know, they felt like it wasn't justice if all the group members didn't get some punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Which I honestly agree with. Like, I feel like even if you could have proved that Bryant was the main shooter or the only shooter, there were five other people that participated.
100%.
Natasha has since earned her GED and has become certified in cosmetology.
Congratulations.
Exactly. Her mother said that Natasha is now a mentor for inmates as they work to earn their degrees in jail.
Lord, you don't want her to mentor shit, okay?
No, she's tried it. She failed.
Yeah, she was not a good mentor before. And sis, I don't think you a good mentor now. So.
Mm-mm. So the DA has spoken out about this case, and it still resonates in the town. And he has said that since this day and since this crime has taken place, he has felt this weird, sinister, I couldn't think of the word that he used, and I couldn't find it once I was writing this sentence, but like he just said something felt like off. Like this used to be a thriving, Christian, wholesome community, mm-hmm. godly, and then this like, in his mind, this satanic act took place, this horrendous act. And he said that something just hasn't felt right since that moment.
Mm.
So he also stated, yeah, the vibes are totally off. He also stated that he believes the group was on or would go on to do a killing spree due to Natasha's obsession with the movie Natural Born Killers.
Mm.
We will never know what the group's true intentions were, but thankfully they were caught within 2 days of the murders.
Good.
And now we will leave you with a lighter note, as we always do. Peter Lillilid, you know, he's just thriving. Peter is doing well. He did end up losing his eye, and he does have permanent neurological damage where it requires him to use a walker and or a wheelchair at times.
Mm-hmm.
But he went on to live with his father's family in Sweden, and they later adopted him as well.
Oh.
He has no memory from the day that his family was killed.
That's a blessing.
And he is now in his late 20s. He got married in 2020 and is living in Connecticut.
Wonderful. Yes. I love that.
He works in IT and, you know, he's just doing great.
I love that. I love that so much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad he doesn't remember.
Oh, I know. He did say, I was reading an interview that he did. He said that when he was five, so this happened when he was two.
Mm-hmm.
He said that when he was five, his adopted father like jerked the wheel of a car.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that he went like unconsolable for like hours. And they think it attributed to maybe like something in his memory that that he was associating it with.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that he goes back to Knoxville often. He said that was his hometown and there will always be a part of him there. And he doesn't want to hate the home, you know, his hometown.
Yeah.
He has not spoken to any of the killers. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't plan to.
Good. He don't need to speak to them. Let them rot.
You absolutely do not need to speak to them.
Yep. Let them rot.
So that is the case of the Lillilid murders.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That was one.
You know, we don't typically blame parents. We really don't. The system failed a lot of these kids.
Yeah. And their parents, you know, their upbringing definitely molded this.
Yes. That's what I was getting at.
But not all of them, but majority of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got Jason who's drinking at 3 years old. That's a fail on the parents' part. Sorry about it. Yeah. I don't feel bad saying that. A 3-year old, really?
I'm still stuck on how you even accessed it, but that's beyond me.
Yeah. And then you've got, you know, Crystal, whose mom chose her stepdad over her. You know, like, I mean, so none of these situations were all the parents' fault. None of these situations were all the school's fault or administration or teachers, but definitely more things could have been done.
Yeah, 100%.
100%, yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm glad they all got life in prison without parole. I'm glad Peter is living his best life.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah.
He's like as cute as a little button.
A little button.
Yes. Oh. And Natasha don't get to use her poo nanny up in prison. So.
Nah, I mean, she might.
She might. You right. Mm, you right.
She might. Mm. You know, they be doing some things in jail.
They do. Mm-hmm. They do.
They do.
They do telephone with the toilets.
Yeah. That's just a life that I don't ever want to know. I don't ever want to experience. I'm going to just stay on the good path.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah, because I don't think I'd be able to survive in prison, honestly.
Absolutely not.
I
wouldn't.
No, I have poop anxiety, so the fact that I would have to poop in front of my, you know, cellmate would just, no. It would never work out. It would, no.
They would put you in the infirmary and they'd be like, oh my God, she's so backed up, like we're going to have to do surgery.
Like, oh my God, she needs an enema.
She needs 5 enemas. Oh, the enema days.
I would literally go to the infirmary just like, look, I got a shit. And this is the only place I can get it done.
Yep. So just close that door. You can leave a guard outside. I don't even care.
Yep. I just need to drop this thing.
Yep. So yeah, that is the case I had for you today, guys. It doesn't sit well with my soul.
No.
And we will never have all the answers, but I did want to bring you this information.
Well, thanks for bringing it to us.
It's
definitely a doozy. And I'm about ready for bed now. So.
Same. I'm in mid-yawn, as you just heard.
Yeah. We're 77 minutes in and Gotta edit this tomorrow, so I should probably get my bootay to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So as always, the bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So we will see you for our happy hour episode.
Beep, 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 beep.
Bye.
Bye.